You may have heard that 50% of new restaurants fail, but that also means 50% succeed. Let's take a look at four.
It's an Americanized Mongolian barbecue, where Mongolian barbecue has that huge round grill. Guests select their ingredients, they put it all together.
A national chain, a mom and pop shop.
The people that scare me the most in life are the people who say, we've been married for 50 years and we've never had a fight. Those are the budding serial killers in the world, okay?
A high school friend partnership and a love of cooking.
I don't shirk my responsibilities in terms of the office, but if I compare going through a spreadsheet to butchering a whole pig, I'm going to definitely pick the pig.
Two of these four are still around. The other two aren't. Listen and see if you can guess which two survived. This is The Language of Business, a weekly podcast designed to inform and inspire entrepreneurs and anyone thinking about a startup. Learn about strategies that work and strategies that don't work. I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Our host is Greg Stoller, Harvard MBA and senior lecturer at Boston University Questrom School of Business. On this episode, we'll look at restaurant profitability and learn about a job opportunity in business development that has nothing to do with restaurants. Here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. It's no surprise that the restaurant business runs hot and cold. We're here at Fire and Ice in Boston with Rafael Barbosa, who is the Chief Operating Officer. Rafael, welcome to The Language of Business.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You run five restaurants at the same time. How is that possible?
Time. Lots of time. A little stress. No hair. So yeah, we run five restaurants. We are based out of Boston. We have systems in place that kind of help run those restaurants across the country.
And where are they across the country?
Mostly in the East Coast. So we have Boston and Cambridge, and then we have a location in Providence, Rhode Island. And then we have all the way out west, we have one in Southern California in Anaheim, in the Anaheim Garden Walk. And then we have Northern California in South Lake Tahoe.
How did you arrive at these five locations?
When they first opened, we won the NRN Hot Concept Award, and it kind of generated a lot of buzz. At the time, Marriott was in town. They just fell in love with Fire and Ice Boston. They went to the time to the owner, Jim Miller, and said, you know, I really want to open this as a franchise. What do you think of franchising? We're like, well, we never really thought of franchising, but let's do this. So we now have three franchise and two corporate.
Is this a standard franchise arrangement where they pay you an upfront fee and then royalties?
Pretty standard upfront fee, and then we have royalties. It's a low compared to other franchise restaurants. It's a reasonably a low fee. If they hit benchmark sales, then the fee tends to go up.
It's a common truth in the restaurant business that wherever you are, the restaurant runs the best. So how do you run places on the West Coast to do it well?
I travel a lot, you know, and I hire the good operators where we have this, like I said, systems in place. That really is all.
How about the day-to-day profitability? How do you manage that aspect?
Day-to-day profitability, stick to the budget. I mean, that's probably one of the most important things is, you know, if they miss their budget, find out why. Try to, you know, pivot in any sort of way we can to make sure that we hit that bottom line number. Constant improvement through making things a little bit better.
Are the demographics of all five restaurants the same?
They're not. It's a great question. So Fire and Ice, Boston, Cambridge, and Providence are all located in heavily college-focused areas. So our demographics tend to skew towards the 18 to 24 college students, whereas our Anaheim and our South Lake Tahoe locations are both in heavily tourist areas. And South Lake Tahoe is one of the best ski areas around, so it gets a lot of that, you know, pre-ski, you know, post-ski, you know, want to have a drink, want to have a nice comfort meal, whereas Anaheim is across from Disney. It's literally right across from Disney, so we get that a lot of family and a lot of tourists, people out of town. So,
given that there are changing demographics, is the profitability of each of those restaurants the same?
They are a little bit different, whereas the Boston college crowd, they tend to eat a little bit more as the South Lake Tahoe ski crowd, you know, so that it does tend to change a little bit. Luckily that these restaurants on the East Coast have a little bit more volume, so it kind of all ends up working out.
As you get more volume, does it automatically equal more profitability?
Not necessarily. As much as I wish it would. Depends. I mean, sometimes, you know, the management team could have a bad month where they just let something slip, they order too much, things have to be thrown out, or there's thefts that we're not, you know, we're unaware of. So not necessarily, but most likely that tends to be the case.
What makes your food offerings unique?
So Fire and Ice is a unique concept. It's an Americanized Mongolian barbecue, where Mongolian barbecue has that huge round grill. Guests select their ingredients, they put it all together.
So the guests put together their own combinations?
They do. Guests select their ingredients, and then we have the giant grill in the middle of the restaurant. If the guest has an allergy, we train our staff to accommodate them a little bit differently, where their food is cooked out back, separately from everything, just in case we know there's so many allergies, we have to make sure everyone's safe.
Here in your Boston location, you have two floors. Are both floors exactly the same?
They're not. So we've been around, like I said, for about over 15 years now. And in this Boston location, we had this bar downstairs, which was, you know, not performing to where we'd like it to. It's a big space and a great location. And we just decided to, instead of remodeling it, we decided, well, let's try something new. Whereas Fire and Ice is, you know, the 18 to 25 sure. demographic. And we tried, well, what happens if we reach out to that over 30, that business crowd, you know, people who get out of the office, they want to have a drink. So we created Under Fire, which is a new concept. It is a craft cocktail bar with a built-in taco bar. I love food trucks. I've always wanted to own a food truck. I'm a little past that now. So what I did is we put a food truck kitchen inside of a bar. So while you're having a cocktail, you can have some fresh tacos as well. It's doing really well.
From a profitability perspective, the COO runs the entire show. How do you deal with the boss?
The boss, well, as long as my bottom line numbers are there, he usually is pretty happy.
Rafael, thank you.
You're welcome. It was great to be on the show.
Rafael Barbosa, the COO of Fire and Ice.
Coming up on The Language of Business, two friends from high school open a restaurant in the middle of the 2008 recession. But first, when your business partner is also your spouse, how do you successfully mix your work family and your real family? As The Language of Business look at restaurant profitability continues. Back to Greg Stoller.
A family-owned restaurant evokes images of kids waiting tables or washing dishes. But what happens when your family is instead your spouse, your siblings, or your in-laws? Can you handle the heat in the kitchen? We're here in Needham, Massachusetts, and Steve and Karen Waller of the Center Cafe. Welcome to The Language of Business.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How did this become a family-owned restaurant?
Back in 08, we sold the business we had in the Berkshires. It was a full-service country inn. We sell in July 08. The market goes you know where in September. Well, the Berkshires still have not fully recovered job-wise. So in 09, we purchased this, opened it in 2010 to literally keep the family healthy during awful economic times.
How do you split running the business? Are you both creative? Are you both business people?
Yeah, right.
I host. My wife does the books. One of my stepsons is the bartender. The other stepson and his wife are the chefs. And that's how we keep church and state separate.
Does being related help or hinder your operations?
Yes and yes.
And yes and yes.
How so?
There's trust factor. There's understanding how they work. And there's the relationship that you have outside. The difficulty is, it is your family. And when it gets tense and heated during the battle of serving dinner, you're looking at your relatives, but you're looking at your employee. So that's where there's a rub, but it works.
Did everybody buy in, or did you start the business and then invite your family to join you?
Well, let me tell you, we started the corporation as a corporation. Stephen and I are the members. We didn't make the kids part of the corporation because we didn't want them to be impacted negatively if there was a negative impact financially.
Would you ever consider introducing non-family members into your business?
Yes.
Well, we do, actually. Some of our staff, we don't have enough family to staff the restaurant completely, so there's Sandy and there's Bridget on the floor and there's Fondly in the back, and we treat them all the same. We're all my kids.
Would you ever consider receiving non-family money as investors into the restaurant?
I would have to have the kernel of an idea if we were approached to carry a conversation forward, but I wouldn't say no out of hand.
What about by marriage? If one of your kids gets married and somebody wants to join the business, what would you do then?
Sit them down with a cocktail and say, do you really want to do this? And then they become part of the family business.
You've had a fight at home. How do you stop that fight from coming into the restaurant?
That's a very, very good question, because the people that scare me the most in life are the people who say, we've been married for 50 years and we've never had a fight. Those are the budding serial killers in the world, okay? We have a fight, we don't bring it into work, because you know what? Once you come in through this door, it's not husband and wife, and we can schizophrenically change into a new relationship. We may argue when we get out and continue it, yeah. But not while we're here.
No, he's my business partner here, not husband.
How long have you been married?
87, is that 25? 28 years.
28 years.
I have to do the math quick. 28 years.
You've had a horrible night at the restaurant. How do you avoid it coming home?
Sometimes you can't avoid it coming home.
Sometimes you cannot.
There's a double whammy. Small businesses on their own are all consuming, so are family restaurants. How do you keep balance between your life and everything else?
Most of my life is my business, and that is a difficult thing sometimes to live with. We don't sit around the table in a restaurant with our family to celebrate something because I see them 6.5 days a week.
In truth, I disagree a little bit with Steve on this. The photography you see on the walls is mostly his, some of it's mine. We do a ton of photography. He's in the middle of looking at a children's book, as is my bartender. There are other things we do, but we don't give them the amount of time that we sometimes want.
You have a thriving business, but it's time to retire. How would you feel if your children do not want to take over the successful business?
It's fine.
Would not bother us. No. And we've had these conversations.
It wouldn't bother us at all. What we are more concerned with is that if we decide to retire, that the family is taken care of and comfortable.
Even if it means shutting down 20 years of success over two restaurants?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Karen, Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve and Karen Waller, the owners of Center Cafe here in Needham, Massachusetts.
Still to come, a restaurant owner who'd rather be carving up a pig than checking the books. But first, two friends from high school open a restaurant in the middle of the 2008 recession. Next on the Language of Business look at restaurant profitability. Our sponsor is Art Lifting. If you've listened to some of the recent episodes of this podcast, you've heard us talk about Art Lifting. Now, Art Lifting has a job opening. They're looking for a business development associate to research prospects, identify sales opportunities, create strategies, and close new business. A bachelor's degree is required. To apply, send a cover letter and resume to liz@artlifting.com. That's Liz, L-I-Z, @artlifting.com. Include business development associate and your name as the subject line. You're listening to the Language of Business look at restaurant profitability. Back to our host, Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. They say restaurants make most of their money on alcohol, but how do you capitalize on that? We're here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, a Cava Tapas and Wine Bar where they have not only one, but two wine bars. John Acker and Greg Sessler, welcome to the Language of Business.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Do you get double the profits because you have two wine bars?
I wish, but no. When we first opened the restaurant, we had a similar view that the restaurant industry and clientele had gone to a scene where people really liked sitting at a bar, even if you were going to a very nice restaurant. Not generally speaking, you'd always want to sit at a table. There's a lot of businessmen that are always constantly traveling. Very regularly, they are by themselves. So having the option of the bar seating allows people in that kind of predicament to come in and still feel comfortable to have a nice dinner while sitting at a bar and not like alone at a table, if you will.
How do you make money opening in 2008, the height of a recession?
You know, 2008 was a tough time to start. We've kind of gone into it with the idea that we didn't know any better, and that was what we had expected. So each year it's gotten a little easier since then as things have improved.
John, how did you get started in 2008 from a financial perspective?
Greg and I both went to high school together. We were best friends in high school. I grew up in his family. He grew up in mine. My father is a financial consultant, estate planner in the area. And he had seen Greg and I work through the business, had a lot of confidence in both of what we brought to the table. Said that he would finance the project in the beginning. I guess not popular with a lot of his financial friends.
In shorter phrases, they thought he was nuts.
Pretty much, yeah. But at the same time, we had confidence in ourselves with what we were doing. I don't think we would have done it otherwise. It was literally only a little over 3 years later that we were actually able to pay him back.
Is he still a partner in the business?
No, and that was one reason why it actually worked out. My father knows nothing about the restaurant business. He technically doesn't like going to restaurants because he believes he cooks the best food in the world at his house. But he did this by saying, listen, you guys do what you want to do. I really will have no impact on what you're going to do. He was about as silent as a silent partner could be. But once he did receive his money back, there is no other tie to the restaurant with him.
Are you both 50-50 partners?
We are, yes.
Are you also 50-50 partners in profits and in losses?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yep. Have you had any down years since 2011 when you repaid the original investment?
No.
No.
We've been very fortunate that our numbers have grown every single year that we've been open, knock on wood. You know, we're a very small restaurant, so on Fridays and Saturdays, we hit capacity fairly easily. What we have seen in larger numbers is the middle of the week clientele. You know, most people, when the economy was bad, they were coming out on Friday and Saturday night. That was their night to go out.
Right.
You're seeing more now people coming out on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday nights, which is growing those numbers exponentially through the years.
Also for us too, I mean, one thing about that is we've been trying to put back into the restaurant, you know, whether it be maintenance or decor or the staff, we're constantly trying to continually invest back into that platform, I guess.
If you could do it all over again, would you?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Restaurants are, yeah, it's certainly is one of those things you have to be passionate about. I mean, there's definitely easier ways to probably make money out there, but yeah, it is a fun way, I think John and I both have passion for it and enjoy working together. And
yes,
absolutely, absolutely.
Greg Sessler, John Acker, co-owners of Cava Tapas and Wine Bar here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Thank you for being on The Language of Business.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Next up, a restaurant owner who'd rather be carving up a pig than checking the books. One more time, here's Greg Stoller.
Jeff Fournier has definitely earned his stripes on his way to restaurant ownership. He's worked across the country, originally starting as a line cook. He's currently the owner and executive chef at 51 Lincoln. Jeff, welcome to The Language of Business.
Hi, it's great to be here.
The focus of our segment is on restaurant profitability. How often do profits or costs factor into your culinary decisions?
The way that ingredients have risen in price over the years, particularly the last 5 years, I would say, we really have to think about that more. We used to look at certain price point for certain dishes. The perception of the guests of how much they should spend on a plate of bolognese is sort of a fixed perception. We tend to take a hit on that dish a little bit more than we would otherwise because of that perception.
So is that meant to be a loss leader in favor of other higher margin items?
Exactly.
Do you ever have to re-engineer one of your hotter dishes in order to make it more cost effective for you?
Overall, rather than change a dish, I tend to maybe move that dish along if we aren't committed to keeping it on the menu.
Move along being off the menu?
Exactly. Move it into something new, maybe that has similar ingredients, but it's a different presentation or a different portion size. Beef particularly just keeps going up in price. To put a sirloin steak on the menu here, if I was going to go with my straight cost percentage, we would be looking at charging, say, $55. You know, and we're not a steakhouse, so we tend to do cuts that are a little less expensive so we can put a steak on the plate for, say, $32, $35, and it gives people a little bit of breathing room.
Do you have a fixed percentage that you include as a margin over your costs for your standard item?
What we end up looking at is trying to fit things into as close as we can to about a 27% food cost, knowing that our blended food cost for the month should be under 28%. There are a lot of dishes that will be 23, 24%, and then some that will be more like 33%. Particularly when we talk about steaks and some of the seafood, like if we get into using wild halibut or those kind of fish that really are coming to us at a much higher cost, you know, we have to pass some of that on to the guest. But there's a perception, anything over $30 for a fish dish, unless it's lobster or something like that, really limits us in terms of perception.
What is usually the highest percentage of cost in a restaurant? Rent, labor, food costs, something else?
Well, for us, it's definitely labor. I don't even have to think about that. The way that we cook, we bring everything in as a raw ingredient. We make everything from charcuterie to ice cream, bread, everything. And we even have a roof garden on the roof where we grow about 150 tomato plants and peppers and other things that help us to produce somewhere about $18,000 to $20,000 worth of produce per year. Which helps pay for one of those cooks. But overall, you know, we're definitely above what I think the industry standard is in terms of labor cost, but our food cost tends to be a couple points lower because we are putting that labor into raw ingredients as opposed to buying something that's already processed.
How much food do you have to throw out every week?
literally almost nothing. In my kitchen, we use every single thing, whether it's stems of parsley going to stock, or even today we're prepping our watermelon steak, which is kind of a signature dish for us, and we pickle the watermelon rinds. We make use of everything that can be used.
Help us think through, as an executive chef owner, buy versus rent your space.
Absolutely buy if you can. I've been blessed with a good landlord here at 51 Lincoln that has been very supportive of me. But overall, the ability to control your fixed cost is a big thing.
Front of the house, back of the house, in the accounting room, how do you allocate your time and how do you choose where to place your time?
My passion is definitely the kitchen. I would much rather have a knife in my hand or be having a conversation about dishes, and I don't shirk my responsibilities in terms of the office, but if I compare going through a spreadsheet to butchering a whole pig, I'm gonna definitely pick the pig.
Jeff, thank you. Jeff Fournier, the executive chef and owner here at 51 Lincoln in Newton, Massachusetts.
Thanks, Greg. We just looked at four different restaurants in interviews that were done a couple of years ago for the TV version of The Language of Business. Since then, two of the four have closed. Can you guess which two succeeded? 51 Lincoln filed Chapter 11 and closed, and was replaced in 2018 by another restaurant, which is also closed. Center Cafe closed in 2017, and now another restaurant is open in the same location. We post a new episode of The Language of Business every Tuesday. You can get us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Alexa, or wherever. If you subscribe, you'll get it automatically. We have downloads on six continents, all but Antarctica, where Wi-Fi is spotty at best anyway. Also in 26 states, so we appreciate the support. Our director is Mark Mandel. Social media by Jennifer Powell. Consulting producer, Helen Tierney of Happy Accident Productions. Podcast editing and voiceover by yours truly. For Greg Stoller and the entire team, I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Thanks for listening to The Language of Business.